Otaku no Podcast, episode 18 for Monday, January 17th, 2011. Anime LA 2011 review. Well, we are back from Anime LA 2011, and we had an absolute blast. Our two panels went well, technical glitches notwithstanding, and the convention as a whole was just amazing once again. I'm impressed at what Chaz Boston Baden, the sort of head honcho at Anime LA, and his staff are able to do. And, of course, we are here with our usual panel-style review of Anime LA. But before we get into that, though, I do have a couple things I need to bring up. First of all, if you haven't already, please head over to iTunes and give us a rating. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be 5 stars. Of course, we'd appreciate it if it was, but be honest. We respect your honesty. And a few words of comment wouldn't hurt either. Also, we need your help on YouTube. If you haven't been following our Twitter, basically, several days ago, we mysteriously were suddenly given the ability to upload videos longer than 15 minutes to YouTube. When I found out, I immediately started uploading longer versions of our several cooking episodes, as well as the podcasting and photography panels. But just as mysteriously as it appeared, the long video upload privileges mysteriously disappeared. Apparently, this is not an isolated incident. This has been happening to a lot of people on YouTube, and we don't know what is going on, and the YouTube administrators have been curiously silent on the subject. Several theories have been passed around on why this happened. One of the ones that seems to have the most traction is that if you upload some videos but then delete some videos, for some reason that causes the long uploads flag to go away. And in fact, after I uploaded the longer versions of our videos, I deleted the shorter versions that I had uploaded there a long time ago. So maybe that's what happened. I'm not sure how we can get our long upload privileges back, but one thing that might help is to have all of you guys go to our YouTube channel, watch our videos, and maybe even rate them or favorite them and write some comments, something. Just maybe if enough people go and start watching our videos or commenting on them or something, YouTube will suddenly decide to grant me the long upload privileges again. I hope, maybe. Anyways, check out our YouTube channel. The links to that are in the show notes. Anyways, enough about that. Let's get on to our panel review of Anime LA 2011. All right, this is Donald from Otaku no Podcast, and we are here with the gang back from Anime LA. Before we get into that, though, I just want to acknowledge the horrific events in Arizona. We got wind of this Saturday evening right before Masquerade, and it really cast kind of a grim shadow over the rest of the weekend. And I just want to extend our heartfelt condolences to Senator Gabrielle Giffords, Judge John Roll, and everyone else killed or injured in the horrific event. So,
yes, although we have been hearing that Congresswoman Giffords is doing quite well.
That is good to know.
Just let's hope she keeps going.
My hope is that no matter what the cause of this incident turns out to be, that perhaps some small good can come out of it. Perhaps we will pay more attention to the violence of our political rhetoric as well as the deficiencies in our healthcare system, particularly access to mental health services.
Yeah, hope is that, you know, we'll just sort of make a step back and go, whoa, wait a minute here.
Here's to civility.
Indeed.
Cheers.
So, Anime LA, this is its 7th year, and what did you guys think?
It's wonderful. It's my favorite con. Absolutely. I've attended it ever since the beginning, and the main vital difference between Anime Los Angeles and everything else out there is that the people who run it have been running cons for decades now, and they know what they're doing, and they anticipate a lot of the problems that tend to stymie other con staff.
Yeah, Chaz, he's also the guy who does LostCon, right? And they've been doing for quite a while.
Yes, LostCon, I believe, is getting close to its 40th year.
because there may be other completely clueless people out there besides myself, what is LostCon?
LostCon is a science fiction convention that's put on by the LOSFS, Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society, which is the oldest continuing science fiction club in the world. It's been around since for several decades. And LostCon is a science fiction convention more oriented towards literary science fiction and fantasy than film or the like. And I participated in it as a dealer this past year. And it is run by a group of which Chaz is a member, and it is run by a lot of the same staff.
That's very interesting to me because, you know, many moons ago when I had time in my life, I read a lot of science fiction. So I probably am of an earlier vintage, and I might be able to find something relevant to me there.
Well, one thing I noticed comparing the two conventions, and this is relevant to what Michelle said, is that it is run by the same people. It is in the same location and has a lot of the same staffers and technical people. In fact, as I joked during the event, it's kind of like the convention kept going when I went home. And when I came back, the attendees were replaced by younger people because the demographics of science fiction conventions tend to skew older than anime conventions, and a lot more people in their teens and 20s attend Anime Los Angeles and LostCon.
Now, Pam, this was your first year at Anime Los Angeles, so I'm particularly interested in your thoughts on the event.
I'm glad I finally got to go. The times I've been invited, something bad has happened to me, and I'm, you know, all kinds of bizarre things, illness, accidents, whatever. And this time I thought, will I really get to go? And I really liked it. For me, it had a lot of pluses. It was easy to understand for someone who doesn't know as much about anime as a lot of my friends do. It was compact so that, you know, you didn't have to have the stamina to go for, you know, for almost a week. It was, we stayed in the hotel, so it was very easy to get around. I'm a disabled person, so, you know, and chronically ill, so this is important to me. But also it's important to others for comfort and convenience and being able to access the things that they, you know, they want to see. I was very impressed by the staff. They were very efficient, very, very caring, very, competent. And also there seemed to be enough of them. You know, I've been to conventions.
Absolutely.
Where, yeah,
absolutely.
That was really important because when, you know, when something needed to be done, there were people there who could do it right away. So all in all, I was very impressed, very comfortable, and learned a lot. So
mm-hmm. Now the hotel, what do you guys think of the hotel? This was the LAX. It was held at the LAX Airport Marriott, and I think how many years have they been at this hotel? But isn't this
a couple of years?
Yeah, but is this the hotel where they also hold LostCon?
Yes.
It is the hotel where they also hold LostCon. It is the hotel where they are going to hold the Gallifrey 1 Doctor Who convention next month. In fact, it's kind of like the movie Demolition Man, where all restaurants have become Taco Bell, and now all Los Angeles conventions practically have become LAX Marriott conventions.
And the hotel seems to really like their presence. When we checked into our room, we were greeted by a rather nice letter from the hotel staff, basically saying, you know, we hope you enjoy the convention, and if you're not into anime, we hope you enjoy, you know, the creativity of the youngsters, basically. And I thought that was just a really nice sentiment.
For me, it was easy to access all of the things we wanted to see. It was laid out well. The staff knew where everything was. It's important when you're at a convention and you have there's a lot of packed, you know, fun things to do within a limited time. You don't want to waste all your time finding where you're supposed to go.
Yeah, or walking, you know, from here to eternity and back, you know.
Yeah, I wound up staying elsewhere. Got to give a shout out to the wonderful people at the Motel 6 LAX. Very nice facility. It's not your normal Motel 6. It used to be a Days Inn a long time ago, but they basically went in and it and you know, the rooms are very nice and spacious, and also it was half as much to stay there as it was even under the even under the con rate.
They did have a pretty decent con rate, though, and especially
yes, that they did,
and especially nice that we got a good decent break on the parking. I think normally it's like 30 something. We were charged 11, I believe.
It was a huge help to us, and the reason we stayed there is basically because we both have disabilities, and it, you know, it made it more possible for us to access the things we wanted to do and not spend all of our time getting to and from the con.
Right, and I was also running two panels, so I had like, you know, over 9,000 pounds of gear with me, and having to move that, you know, here to Eternity would not have been fun.
I need to plug your panels, by the way. You need to describe them.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get to that later. The area, LAX area, can be kind of creepy, but the nice thing is, you know, everything was in the hotel, and it looked like they had some pretty decent choices in terms of places that deliver there. Mm-hmm. And if, God forbid, you had to use the hotel restaurant, you know, the food actually wasn't that bad.
Michelle, how did you find the access to the hotel?
Oh, it was fine. It was totally fine. I would basically take a metro bus from my base of operations to the con every time, and it was a brief hop, skip, and a jump from the bus stop to con, and I got there and back again via something called the LAX Flyaway.
Yeah, the Flyaway is awesome.
Yeah, I live in the San Fernando Valley, so I went from the Van Nuys Flyaway to Con, and then I took the Van Nuys Flyaway back. And it's brilliant. It's like $7 each way, which, when you compare that to how much it costs to take a cab or take one of the shuttle services out there, it's a bargain. And it's like I wound up splurging on a cab to get home from the Flyaway, and it was a short cab ride. It makes a great deal of sense, especially if you do not live near the LAX area. Although this is not the case for one of our esteemed colleagues here who lives on the west side, so it was an easy matter to basically you handled that as a commuter, right?
Oh yeah, we just drove back and forth from our house to the con, which got kind of expensive the day zero evening because we didn't know to get a validation on the ticket. And when I paid my parking, it was about $22 without the validation.
Ouch.
With a validation, it's about $14 a day.
You know, I think that, you know, it might be kind of nice for us to, before the next con, compile a lot of different options for getting there and putting it on the website.
That might be a very good idea.
That's a pretty good idea, yeah.
And also, one of the panels I was in, I hate to speak badly of a panel, but I was in one called Budgeting for Cons. And it seemed like the guy who was running it was, you know, I mean, he was this teenage kid who really didn't know a great deal about real world budgeting for a con. You know, it was more his experiences going to Anime Los Angeles a few times and dealing with it as a child who is still living under his parents' roof. I think maybe if one of the things we should do in notes like this is to talk about budgeting and cutting corners and, you know, letting people know that there are a lot of, you know, alternatives out there for good, cheap grub.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
And what you should do. I mean, I didn't know about validation either, and I was just lucky I stumbled into it correctly. So,
yeah.
And we have a good representation because two of us come from, you know, outside of the metro area, and we have someone who lives there, and we have someone who is within a bus and other transportation distance. So I think that would be a kind of useful thing to do.
And I mean, there were people who were coming in from further out than where you guys live. I talked to somebody who had drove down from Washington State and was driving back up again. And there were a few people who had flown in. So
that's interesting. We should try and maybe track some of those down as well. And, you know, we've done both the car and the train. And as Donald mentioned, the car was kind of necessary this time because of the nature of your panels, photography equipment and podcast equipment. We couldn't.
Hey, I brought my stuff on the flyaway and so forth. I managed to do it without even having a car, and I look back on it and go, "Whoa, I did that!"
Yeah, that's an achievement. Congratulations.
So Chaz recently came up with the official attendance number. According to Chaz, we had 3,598 warm bodies pick up their badges. So it was almost 400 more people than last year's convention. Did the conventions feel crowded to you, to any of you?
Depended on the event. I mean, if there's a situation where all the panels are out and the people are concentrated in one area, then it's going to feel a bit crowded. But generally, I would say I didn't really have a problem getting around, and I didn't have a problem with long lines.
It seems that the NMLA staff are really making a conscious effort to manage the growth rate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they realize that part of what makes Anime Los Angeles what it is the fact that it's not a huge con. And, it's good that they're doing that because it's going to die on the vine fairly quickly if growth is unmanaged.
Well, I think having a lot of staff really helps too. They don't yet have a special disability office or registration or policy. But they're open to it now that it's growing. We all had a chance to mention that. I limp around slowly, and I was not slammed against a wall or forced to stand in a line where I would eventually collapse. They were very accommodating, and there were enough people to where you could ask and say, well, you know, is there a place that I can sit or whatever? And that makes a big difference.
And you didn't have people playing ninja all over the place and walking up the down escalator and things like that. You know,
I had that at a big con.
I know.
We won't mention it. But
we talked about that in a previous episode.
In July, I'm still not completely healed. That was July. And I don't blame anybody except the fact that there weren't enough staff. You know,
and the thing is that the facilities was working under a skeleton staff as well, and so you know it's just the beauty thing about ALA is that they're keeping tabs on growth and they're adding more staff and paying attention to things. And, and they have the right spirit. This is something that was a problem early on in this con's history. You had people who were working security who were a bit, you know, on a power trip. And what happened was that there were a lot of complaints about the attitude. And so the next con that they did, I think it was like the, between ALA 2 and ALA 3, they came up with the whole concept of the fairy godfathers, and that basically security had not only the responsibility of maintaining order, but also the responsibility of customer experience management, where you know, they would have to you know, basically take sort of a customer service way of looking at things and be polite and not be taking a law enforcement kind of stance. And, you know, it seems like the people who work security at Anime Los Angeles are trained very well at, you know, being good, you know, how should I
good
put it?
Good people.
Well, yeah, good people, but, you know, making people feel at ease.
No, it's a customer service perspective. I'm sorry, I'm the economist. But that's something we've lost in a lot of places in our current culture. And it's really nice to see the caring and the interest in pleasing the people that come to it and also making them comfortable and, you know, wanting them to come back. I was well taken care of, and I found them very open to suggestions for the future and you know, no sour attitudes, no snapping, no blaming the victim, none of that. So,
yeah, and as far as disabled services go, they're definitely aware of the problem. The people we've talked to, you know, say that it has been brought up in meetings before, and they will continue to do so.
And they're proactive because it hasn't really become a problem yet, but they can see it on the horizon.
Right. Like, for example, this year, this year's the first year that I consciously noticed that there are more people in wheelchairs running around. So it's definitely getting, you know, getting growth-wise to a point where they need to start thinking about this, and it sounds like they're on the ball.
Yes.
So registration, you know, we pre-registered, as I believe everyone else did here. You know, just go on the website, click the form, and we got one of those lovely postcards in the mail, and we just brought it to the desk and got
it. I re-upped on Sunday.
There you go. Yeah. Any of you guys have any issues with badge pickup or registration or anything like that?
Oh, heck no.
Not at all.
Danny, I think both of you guys came on day zero to pick up your badges.
Yes.
Is that correct?
It was smooth as silk.
We just walked over to the table. There was maybe one person in front of us, and we picked up our badges. They printed them right out, and that was it.
That's so amazing.
And yeah, and Danny, you were commenting on day zero. They actually had quite a bit of activity even on day zero.
Yes, I was surprised. Now, this is something that they fell down on a little, because the event on Thursday was an ice cream social. And if you went onto the website for the convention and looked up ice cream social, it said more information coming soon. And in fact, I believe if you look at it today, you'll see more information coming soon. They didn't say on the website that the ice cream social was going to be had day zero. But that didn't seem to matter, because there were a lot of people at that ice cream social, which was held right in the lower lobby. And they certainly used up several vats of ice cream, and people just loved it. It's a long time tradition for LostCon to have the ice cream social. It's a novelty for an anime convention, because you need a small enough convention that it's manageable. And people love free sweet food.
I don't think I've been to one since I was 12, and I loved it. I'm a diabetic, and I would still love it for the atmosphere.
And more importantly, you know, it's getting together with your friends and fellow fans and socializing, which I think is a big part of what makes Anime LA special. It's very laid back. It's a great atmosphere for getting to know people.
Absolutely.
So the dealer's room, I did not get a chance to get there until the last day, and I noticed it seemed about the same size-wise as last year, and maybe this is, again, part of their conscious effort to limit the growth rate of the convention. But, you know, like we've mentioned in the past, you know, you're seeing a lot of, you know, character goods type stuff, costuming, cosplay accessories, weapons. I noticed this year, I noticed a lot more anime figures, including Figma, which I thought was kind of cool. And I noticed that my, at least I couldn't find it, my DVD vendor wasn't here this year. And again, maybe that's some commentary onto the continuing change in the landscape in terms of how anime is being distributed nowadays.
Right. Yeah. It's the delivery landscape is changing considerably. But yeah, it's a very cosplay oriented convention. You see a lot of people walking around in hall costumes.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like it's not just something that's limited to the masquerade. There's cosplay everywhere. I mean, there are even panelists at some of these events that were wearing their cosplay. You know, it's
I have a great picture of one of them on our Otakuno podcast Flickr.
Yeah, and when we had the Sketch Jam / Doll Meet, there a couple of the artists were in cosplay. It's very much a cosplay oriented thing, much more than AX, and much more. Well, PMX. The difference with that is that it is a Japanese fashion oriented.
Right. So there was cosplay, but of a different breed.
Yeah, it was a different sort. But yeah, it's very, you know, it's very cosplay oriented, and it always has been.
Yeah, I mean, I saw quite a few workshops on, you know, like cosplay accessories, how to make cosplay accessories and that sort of thing. And every year they have the costume repair station, which is a godsend to many cosplayers, I'm sure.
Yeah, I did want to point out to folks who are listening to this who go only to anime conventions that although cosplay, masquerades, hall costumes originated from science fiction conventions, in fact, the Japanese picked it up at one of our Worldcons and brought it over as cosplay, there is much, much more of it at anime conventions than at science fiction conventions, and much more at Anime Los Angeles than many anime conventions. At LostCon, they have to encourage people to wear hall costumes. They give out ribbons to anybody they see wearing a hall costume. There's no such encouragement necessary at Anime Los Angeles. Probably, if you took a poll, the greatest percentage of people were wearing costumes of some sort rather than just wearing mufti.
Absolutely. So, The AMV contest, this year it was strange, but not in the way you think. For one thing, it actually seemed to go off pretty well technical-wise. There was only one minor video glitch, and they were able to correct that pretty quickly. I did note that this year they were using Macs as the computer system. Whether those two facts are related, I'll leave that up to the listeners to judge.
Yes, make your own inferences on that.
But in terms of the AMVs, I noticed, I think, Danny, you pointed out that we didn't really see very many more modern series, I think.
That's true. Most of them were at least a few years old. There's certainly a lot of really popular anime coming out now, such as Durarara, but you don't really see that reflected in the AMVs. It might be because a lot of the newer anime is distributed only digitally and through sites such as Crunchyroll, and that may have an impact on the ability to convert it into anime music videos, or it may just be people who do AMVs are more fond of the older stuff. But yeah, you saw some video game stuff, you saw some animes from a couple years ago, you saw a lot of Ouran High School Host Club.
Yeah.
And Oh My Goddess, both of which are mid-decade series. And we even had two Ouran videos, AMVs in a row, and I believe two Oh My Goddess videos in a row. So I'm not quite sure why people haven't adopted some of the, or the people who showed AMVs at this con at least, have not adopted some of the newer, quite stylish anime to AMVs.
But the one good part about that is that at least it wasn't, you know, over 9,000 videos using the same old Linkin Park song or the same Naruto fight scene.
Yeah. That improved somewhat.
It's usually my favorite event, or say one of my favorite events, and it still was, but I noticed, again, probably a newbie thing to notice, but the categories weren't that distinct in some cases. You know, I saw some action that kind of looked like drama, and, you know, some drama that kind of looked like action, and some comedy that looked like something else. It was more blurred for me than what I've seen in other places.
Yeah, and frankly, some of the comedy stuff wasn't very funny.
Comedy was weird. Usually you cannot hear yourself think during comedy because the audience is all rip-roaringly raucous. They were curiously silent this year.
Now, I didn't find it all that funny either. Kind of interesting in some cases, but didn't make me laugh. Most of them didn't make me laugh.
I mean, there are certainly some great comedy videos out there. I mean, at Anime Expo this year, you had to peel me off the ceiling. Some of them were so funny. But this year, it was very weird. Very, very weird. I did... the AMV winner results are out, and I posted them on otakunopodcast.com. So check there for the information. Masquerade. There was one issue. I think the hotel forgot to set up the seating in the back half of the room. They were able to correct that fairly quickly and let people in. And I didn't see any noticeable problems there. I mean, Tadao didn't even have to break into one of his corny stories.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the masquerade. I thought that the seating was well done, and the staff again were kept everything running very smoothly. Hi, John DeGroof, one of our friends who's a staff member, by the way. And I thought the costumes were great, and I also especially thought the cosplay was really good. They almost were like professional actors in some cases.
Yeah, there are some good acts this year.
Well, you also have to consider where this convention is located. This is Los Angeles. We are the industry's company town. So in some respects, some people who are just amateurs, you know, they're at a disadvantage because some of these people who are showing up there are, you know, aspiring actors and aspiring wardrobe people and so on and so forth. And maybe, and this is something that just came to me, it's like they have the chibi cosplay event at another convention. Let's not be coy. AX. You know, the idea being that you have a non-formal cosplay event that people might feel a little less self-conscious about getting involved in, sort of a gateway kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, just sinking or swimming in the masquerade competition.
I certainly wouldn't want to discourage people who were doing it for the first time to be afraid. I do think it's you're right. Maybe it could be organized in a different way to make it much more newcomer friendly, but it's not a hostile audience at all. It's a very gentle, I don't want to say forgiving, but easygoing.
I didn't detect any heckling. Everyone seemed genuinely enthusiastic about the performers. And the thing I noticed is they gave out a lot of awards. We were commenting that the judging seemed to be taking an inordinately long amount of time, and well, now we know why. They gave out a whole bunch of awards, and I think, you know, that's another way that they're making it more accessible. You know, there's more chances for you to win and be recognized.
Right. Yeah. I actually another con that handled cosplay in and masquerade in a very different way was PMX. They had basically their equivalent of cosplay going on throughout the con.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what were they calling it? The cosplay event. What it's like?
Cosfest.
Cosfest. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I thought the masquerade worked out well. During the halftime show, we had the lovely ladies and gents of the Animated Cafe performing various dance routines, which was entertaining. And like I said, Ted Au didn't even have to launch into one of his corny stories. It ran surprisingly smoothly. We were out. I think we were out of there by like 9:30.
And for people who weren't there, there were 33. Entries, not just 33 costumes. A lot of them were multiple costumes, 33 entries. So the fact that they moved as smoothly as they did is amazing. And there weren't really any clunkers in those 33. Mm-hmm. Usually there'll be some clunkers. Now, by contrast, I keep bringing up LostCon because this is the convention I attended previous to this one. There were 9 entries in the masquerade.
Ooh,
I mean, the science fiction costumers need to step up.
Well, you know, I have no talent whatsoever or experience, and I'm not exactly a model figure either. But I would feel comfortable giving it a go there because I think that they're all very nice and they're helpful, and it runs smoothly, and the audience isn't, nasty.
Yeah. And I think, Tadao has a lot to do with that. In years past, when they had technical difficulties and the audience started getting restless, Tadao would come up and do one of his corny stories, which, although corny, they were still entertaining and they kept the crowds at bay.
But he's funny. He's a funny guy. And, he's professional. You know, this is the guy, he's done, movies and TV, and he's sort of like, I keep calling him the Asian Robin Williams. It's like he's an undiscovered resource. It's always so much fun to go to this con because we get to see his shtick.
Yeah. So moving on to panels. What did you guys think of the overall lineup? This was the first year I noticed that we actually had something kind of sort of resembling an industry panel. I believe was it Funimation or Bandai? Let me check my notes here.
Bandai
actually had an event there. I didn't go to that, unfortunately, so I'm not sure if it was just probably them rehashing stuff that they announced previously. But, I mean, this is the first year I remember I distinctly remember seeing a more or less kind of sort of official industry panel.
Well, I think that the panels worked very well, and a function of that is the guests, because the guests of honor are going to be put on as many panels as they can swallow.
Right.
And so a lot of what makes a successful panel program is having guests who are entertaining and interesting. This year we had two of the friendliest and most knowledgeable people in the American anime business, which were Patrick Seitz and Taliesin Jaffe. Both of these gentlemen are voice actors and voice directors and adapt Japanese scripts to American scripts. And they are both extremely approachable and personable and funny. Now, the ability to act and the ability to actually be entertaining and funny in person are two different skill sets. And that these two gentlemen have managed them so well makes them fantastic guests. And I'm kudos to Anime Los Angeles for having both of them at the same convention, especially since Mr. Jaffe had been cutting back on conventions for a while.
Wow. Yeah, that's an awesome thing. We also had Helen McCarthy, who totally coincidentally is the person who wrote the Osamu Tezuka book that we featured in the 12 Days of Christmas. Totally coincidental. Not my doing. But,
and my copy got signed. I'm so happy.
Yeah, and she was actually on several panels as well, including one that I went to on your first trip to Japan. And she has this lovely English accent, and she was very entertaining. And of course, we ran two of said panels.
Yep.
Which was definitely a rush.
I think next time we should promote this a bit more because I got a couple of emails from people that were like, "Oh my God, you did two panels there? I didn't know this."
Yeah, and I think that your audience really could be a lot bigger. I think that I have this marketing perspective, but I think that getting the word out, but also it's important, I think, for people to know that you address a lot of different levels of expertise in both of your technical panels. Those of us that are just starting out, I mean, I understood almost all of it, but I also noticed that there were experts in the audience that got a lot out of it too. It's kind of like you do it, beginners first and then moderate and then that's great. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Aw, shucks.
Yeah. I publicized our panels on Twitter and Facebook, and I posted about them. But, yeah, we could definitely do some more promotion in the future.
I have lots of ideas. I don't know if they'll work, but I have lots of ideas. Cool. I think that also the topics of the panels are really relevant. I think taking pictures at the conventions is something that a lot of people really want to do, especially of the costumes. And it's not very easy to get good pictures in that lighting unless you have some tips. And you guys really gave a lot of good advice as far as how to make your pictures come out and be worth looking at. And then the other panel about how to do a podcast, I think there's a lot of people that would love to do a simple podcast and have no clue about how to go about it, or that, you know, it can be done in a very highly technical way, but it can also be done in a very low technical way and inexpensively. So anyway, I learned a lot.
We had a lot of people interested in the podcasting panel, including a guy who I was all evening. I was like going, "That voice sounds awfully familiar." And it turns out he's one of the panelists on the Bang Zoom / Revision 3 podcast, Anime TV, that I am a fan of. And it was really cool meeting him. Now, so one thing that struck me is there was, for a smaller, you know, only a 3-day smaller convention, there was an awful lot going on. Between panels, video rooms, all that stuff. I was up on Saturday night / Sunday morning, right after Masquerade. I was up fairly kind of late writing a blog post, and I noticed there's still an awful lot of activity going on. And this is, it's really cool that even at a smaller event like this, it's like, there's a lot to do.
Yeah, in a lot of respects, it's even better than some of the big cons, And the thing is it, it's not gotten so big and so out of control that you have to do triage. You really can get in a lot of cool activity, throughout.
Right.
Danny, I think you went to more panels, at least more than I did. What did you think about the offerings?
I didn't really go to that many panels, maybe about 5 or 6 of them. I thought the panels were pretty good. I think in general, panels are not as much of a focus in an anime convention as they are in, say, science fiction or comic book convention, because the attraction is more the animation itself rather than discussing things. But that said, the panels I went to were uniformly interesting.
One panel I wanted to mention that really stood out to me was the one on dealing how to communicate with the anime industry professionals. It was put on by Courtney Kraft, who works at G4, the G4 TV network, and she was awesome. First of all, she showed up in cosplay as Integra Wingate's Helsing, so win right there. But more importantly, her presentation was great, very informative, very entertaining. It was probably one of the better panels I went to in a while.
Michelle and Danny What was your favorite panel other than, obviously, the ones that you did, which I'm going to want you both to explain or to give the title of and your names, because that's just me for you.
Oh, I didn't do any panels.
I mean, as far as attending, which one was, let's say, one of your favorites, a highlight?
I'd say my favorite was, aside from the podcasting one, my favorite was the voice directing panel that was done by Patrick Seitz and Taliesin Jaffe, because I think they had fantastic chemistry together, and they gave a lot of insight on what's involved in taking a raw Japanese video and whatever the studio provides as a translation script, and turning that into a show which is entertaining in English, as opposed in addition to the philosophical difference between a subtitled show and a dubbed show, and how there really are, each one brings things to the party that the other doesn't, and one is not inherently better than the other. I think one of the most interesting comments that Taliesin Jaffe made is he said the whole idea of an accurate translation of an anime is a myth. It's something that can't be attained. It's like saying that's a very accurate apple pie. That's about the most accurate apple pie I've ever eaten. It's translating one thing, concepts from one culture into another culture, and trying to present it in such a way that you're entertained by the same things the Japanese audience is entertained, that you get what the creator is trying to put across, but it is a completely different language and aimed at people who are raised in a completely different culture. So there is going to be approximation no matter what you do.
Right, especially with the Japanese culture, because it, you know, because it's so nuanced.
Michelle, did you have a particular, you know, one that you wanted to highlight other than the two that you were doing?
Well, I actually was at the tail end of the same panel that was being discussed, and it's like, I was quite impressed with that. It's certainly I was not aware of a lot of the what goes into taking an anime and making it accessible to American audiences. You know, it's I'm a bit of a sub snob most of the time. And I usually wind up infuriated with most dubs, but I would be more likely to re-examine some of the dubs that these gentlemen have done, because of the fact that they obviously take so much care, and it's like what we were talking about last time when we were talking about the sad passing of Carl Masek, and about how much of a controversial figure he was for making the decisions he did with a lot of these shows that he adapted. And the fact of the matter is, when you look at it from a long view perspective on the popularizing of anime in the United States, you realize that those decisions he made were actually the right ones.
Right, the right decision at you know, given the circumstances at the time. You know, we didn't have DVDs with multiple audio tracks and subtitle tracks, you know, so, and I would argue that at that time, you know, the emerging fan base probably wasn't quite ready for subs at the time. So, you know, his decision to go with dubs, I think, you know, it was the right decision at the time.
And there's a lot that goes into a good dub.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, I'll get to what I'm going to say about a particular pick of mine later on when we do the picks.
Indeed.
Well,
I'm going to jump in here because I'm the queen of non sequiturs, and I just wanted to mention something I got out of the two panels you did. That there were a lot of things I got out of it, but one of the things that really sticks in my mind is. You taught us how to steady our hands while we're taking those photos, even, photos of inside the panels or outside the panels or costumes or whatever. I think a lot of people like me have handshaking problems, possibly due to all the caffeine that's being consumed.
Yeah, I made that as one of my bullet points, lay off the caffeine.
Some of us are not going to lay off the caffeine at those, we would like to stay awake forever. And I thought that the tips on taking pictures while our hands were shaking violently were very useful. And before we move off of the topic of panels, I don't know if you are or not, my inner moderator keeps going in and out. I would like you to, Donald, state the titles of your panels and also how to correctly pronounce both of your names, because I know what it's like to jump in sometimes and worry about how to pronounce names correctly.
So we ran two panels. The first panel was a Convention Photography 101. We basically talk about, how to take better convention pictures. We covered both if you have a point and shoot, as well as a DSLR.
Actually, we were able to cover bridge cameras too, and
yes.
That's a separate situation in and of itself. I am now the proud owner of a Nikon P100, and that is one of those lovely super zoom bridge cameras. And you're talking about something that you have a bit more control than you do with a point and shoot, but it's not quite an SLR.
Right.
But you still explain what you can do with a good old point and shoot.
Exactly, which yes. is what what most of the audience has. Our second panel was Anime Podcasting for Beginners, and as the title implies, we went over how to do this whole podcasting thing, which didn't quite go as planned, but. We were able to recover. Both
the audience, me, would never have noticed that anything did not go as planned. There was plenty of information, and it went very smoothly.
I've got full notes as well for both panels. They're up on the Otaku No Podcast website, so check them out.
I'm going to do a podcast. I know the world cannot wait. Okay, now pronounce your names correctly, because
Donald,
believe me, it's embarrassing.
Donald Burr.
And Michelle Klein-Hass.
See, I know what it's like, you guys out there.
Yeah.
Because I sometimes don't comment because I look at someone's name written and I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to go for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. And I have one of those dang furin names. Actually, I started out life with one dang furin name and wound up by marriage acquiring yet another. And... it's still a bit of a task to get people to spell and say my name right.
Danny, you might as well say your name right too. I mean, let's go for it.
Okay, I'm Danny Bearer.
And I'm Pam Gross, and now we've done the Robin round of that.
There we go. Now I did want to mention the apps. This was the first year that Anime LA actually had an app, and they not only had one app, they had two apps. The first that I heard of was called Condroid, and this was an app that a fan put together, completely unofficial. It's available for Android. It had full scheduling information, including schedules for the cosplay gatherings. And it's been a pretty simple app, but you could star events that you're interested in, and then tell your phone to remind you as the time approaches. So I thought that was pretty cool. But as it turns out, they actually had an official app called The Conventionist, and they were heavily promoting this. I noticed some signs posted around the convention, and Tadao-san even mentioned it a couple times during Masquerade. This program is more of a general purpose convention program. When you run it, it actually presents you with a list of schedules. And I noticed several other anime conventions there. I think SAC Anime in Sacramento had one. So maybe more conventions will start using this. Anyways, I thought it had a better presentation because as you scroll through events, it has like little dividers to show you, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. It was easier to tell what time a certain event was. And, you know, just like Condroid, you could sort of star events that you're interested in, and then your phone could remind you. And also, this program was available for both iPhone and Android. But for me, my, you know, apps are great and all, but I think maybe they should have actually gone and done a mobile website, which is actually not that hard to do. And for me, FanimeCon still stands as the gold standard. It was literally, you go to it on your mobile phone. It worked on just about every phone imaginable, iPhone, BlackBerry, Android. And it presents a mobile formatted version of the convention schedule, which I thought it worked amazingly well.
Yeah, and some people have little bitty laptops, you know, have netbooks.
Probably would have worked even on some feature phones that have web browsers, like, you know, like Motorola Razors and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking about the Anime LA website in general, I think it could probably use some work.
Absolutely.
Very hard to navigate, and it's very hard to tell, you know, what information is available. Like Danny mentioned earlier, you know, they didn't have any information about the Ice Cream Social. The information about the Guests of Honor didn't come out until like 2 or 3 days before the convention. And you know, they have other places to get information, like they have a live journal community, and they also have forums on cosplay.com. But it was a problem finding, you know, like I have to go to one place to get this piece of information. I had to go to another place to get this other piece of information. Having everything up on the main Anime LA website, I think, would have made it a lot easier.
I would have to agree. I mean, I people who are doing the website, as in most conventions, are doing it for free as volunteers. So I don't want to come down too hard on them. But this is the 21st century, and we get a lot of our information from websites. And folks who do science fiction anime conventions are supposed to be people who are in touch with the future. So we're not in the era of mimeographing anymore. The way to convey information, especially ahead of time, is via the website.
Right.
And
Absolutely.
I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to keep an up-to-date, easily navigable website.
Yeah, and these days we have great content management systems like WordPress and stuff, so you don't need to learn how to code HTML and PHP anymore to maintain a website. You can just slap something up pretty quickly nowadays. So final thoughts. What do you guys think? Where do you think they could maybe use some improvement, and what really stood out in your mind?
Well, let's see. I think that what really stood out, I think, was the fun that everybody was having, as well.
Agreed.
As when you consider that this is a lot of the convention membership is young, and a lot of it is kids who don't have a lot of adult supervision. They were a fairly well-behaved bunch.
Absolutely.
And I compared to some other conventions, which I won't name. What could be improved? I think we've talked about it. Is information management, getting information out there earlier, having organized information, and letting people know what's going to be there. I mean, it's a great accomplishment to actually grow in this time when the anime industry itself is shrinking, but they could promote that even more by telling people ahead of time what is going on at the convention and when they can find it.
Mm-hmm. Michelle?
It's the fun factor is just the best part of it, and catching up with people that you might not see on a regular basis elsewhere. And their motto is friendliest con around. and it really is. And another thing that that's not mentioned, that was only touched on briefly, was it's really cool to have these hands-on workshops. You know, they're great.
Yes, you went to the charm making.
Omamori.
That's
Omamori.
It. Yes.
And we got a little dose of Japanese culture from that, and the people who ran that they're involved in some sect of Buddhism. I'm not sure, but they describe very very clearly what parts of the whole Omomori thing are Buddhist and what parts of it are more Shinto, and they basically encouraged people to make these charms for friends, apparently, one of the aspects that is not touched upon is that on New Year's, you go down to the local Buddhist temple, or if you're in Japan, usually it's the Shinto temple that would have these. And instead of buying them for yourself, you buy them for your friends, and you bring them back and you give them to your friends as a wish for their prosperity, for their health, for their good fortune, whatever. And it's a very sharing sort of thing. And they taught us how to make these little charms, and they were using primarily recycled materials. It's like you'd have these lovely handmade Japanese washi paper, and there were like little pieces of it. They cut them up into random sized pieces, but easily enough you could, after the holidays, you could save your wrapping paper and then use that around the first of the year to make these little charms for friends. It's really kind of cool. The whole idea of doing this and being ecologically sound with it, this is something very untraditional, but it makes a great deal of sense.
I thought that was a great angle. Yeah, Pam.
Well, I would concur with the importance of the friendly atmosphere that the staff definitely encourages, as well as the structure of the convention. I saw a lot of people not only getting together with friends that they already had, but also making new friends. And I think that that's a really important part of why people come to these events. The other thing is that was mentioned is that there were a lot of young people there. And when I was sitting resting while you guys were running around at one point, there was a man who was talking to a group of us about how a lot of the, I don't know how you put it, but the anime old guard were aging, and they were starting to get, old enough to be getting tired of doing a lot of the work in putting on these sorts of things. And it was wonderful for him to see a lot of young people start to attend and get enthusiastic and kind of make sure that that not only these events continue, but that the interest in anime continues. And I thought that was a real positive.
I was there when this discussion was going on. He was not only talking about anime fandom, he was talking about science fiction fandom in general.
That's right.
It's like so much. When you're talking about science fiction fandom, there is a die-off happening right now. A lot of the people who were, part of the whole fandom thing during the 60s and the 70s, they're not getting any younger. And,
I know. I look in the mirror and I know. I really thought that his points were important as far as not only having someone to pass the torch to, as you pointed out, who you're going to pass it to if there's nobody there, but also that these are really fun and interesting topics, and it's really nice to see that younger people are starting to be able to enjoy them as they learn about their existence. So I thought that was really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, we're at a period of time where there's a changing of the guard going on as far as science fiction fandom in general, because, let's know our roots here. What we refer to as anime fandom is a direct extension out of the greater science fiction fandom, and it's that way not only here but in Japan. For example, everyone's seen those Gainax, Daikon 4 and Daikon 3 animations that were done basically for a Japanese equivalent of WesterCon, basically, the big con that would be in Japan when WorldCon would be somewhere else in the world. WesterCon happens in the Western U.S. when WorldCon is somewhere other than the Western U.S. And it's like Daikon was. Had its origins as the equivalent of that in Japan, and some of the Gainax people wound up being involved with the bid that eventually won. I believe it was in Yokohama a couple of years ago.
Yes, 2007.
Right. Yeah, and it's braided together. You can't separate anime fandom from the greater skein of science fiction fandom, and it's like one of the beauty things of Anime Los Angeles is that it provides an opportunity to expand your tastes, to maybe find out about the more literary science fiction and so forth that maybe you're not exposed to going to school and being a student and after school, you have anime on cable TV, or you get out a DVD, or you go on to Crunchyroll or whatever. It's cool. I mean, science fiction stretches all the way back to like Jules Verne, and to back when steampunk. When you were talking about actual steam technology that existed at that moment, it flows, we're talking about almost 150 years of history here that we're all a part of, and it serves us well to find our place in that stream.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if I don't jump in now, my memory affected by systemic lupus or my advanced age will forget what I was going to say, which, as we all know, is extremely important. I thought that those things were really important, and I totally agree with you guys. The other thing is that we were supposed to talk about what could be improved. And going back to Danny's comment about not knowing validation, et cetera, and the comments you made about the website, I think that one of the things that could be improved is for us all to get some advanced knowledge about, what to do as far as validation, how to get to and from the con, the website working, 21st century website. And as I mentioned before, they're starting to think about disability organization and information and assistance. And the reason I think that's so important is that one of the things I've noticed about anime conventions is that it's a home in some ways for those of us who are different. There's a lot of intolerance in our society towards people that don't fit, you know, the current model of what a human being should be. And since I'm overweight, I'll throw that in. Since I have a lot of wonderful, loving geek friends, I'll throw that in. And I'm going to throw disabilities in too. So I think you're going to see more of a percentage of people with disabilities at anime conventions than you would, say, you know, at your local supermarket. So I'm encouraged to see that there's a openness towards accommodation in the future.
Yes, and as far as the website goes, you know, they should pay attention to accessibility features and so forth, and make sure that their site can be screen scraped for those people who need to use an audio screen scraper. And you know, that's basically a reader that reads everything that's on the screen and makes it available for people who, you know, who have low vision or no vision. And, yeah, and also, you know, quite possibly having people there to accommodate the deaf might be a good thing as well. But, you know, it's like this, we also have to realize that this is a completely volunteer thing. It's not like certain other cons where there's business behind it and there's actual salaried personnel. Nobody draws a salary at Anime Los Angeles, not even Chaz.
You just reminded me of the other thing I was going to say. I love you, because it vanished in my brain. I think, I'm guessing that there's a real opportunity, like you were saying about passing the torch, even in science fiction, for people today to start getting interested in volunteering to help and get involved with some of these things in putting on a convention, not only to kind of start replacing the older people, but to add on different things that might be really useful and interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, they're not, you know, like you said, Michelle, they're not drawing any salary, but the event just ran so smoothly. I mean, that's something to be proud of. I'm
absolutely
really impressed. Okay, well, now is the point in the show when we bust out our picks, and there have been those who accuse me of being a pick hog. So for one thing, I'm actually going to restrain myself this time. I only have two. And for another thing, I will let you guys go first.
Okay. Michelle can go first.
Oh, okay. Well, I only have two picks myself, and they're both on screen. These are picks that I've spoken of before, but the thing is that there's an opportunity right now. It's not going to be around for a long period of time. In fact, it's quite short. To see two of the best animated features on the big screen. Right now, as I speak, Summer Wars is wrapping up its stay at the Sunset 5, which is the Lemley Theater in Hollywood. And you got to see that movie on the big screen. It's, you know, it's that simple. It's like you know, mind blowing, you know, and it's best appreciated theatrically, and they're showing it dubbed. I would have preferred there to be like a chance to see it subtitled. But I've already seen it subtitled, and the fact of the matter is that the dub is surprisingly good. It's well-directed. The dub script is good. The performances are great. You don't hear, you know, typical stilted kind of anime dub acting that you might hear elsewhere. These people who are dubbing it are unknowns pretty much, unless you're a major fan of anime. They do a good job. They do a really good job. And in light of Tron Legacy, it's almost as if Summer Wars is kind of a bookend to that. You know, it's a different environment. You know, Oz's cyber world is as sunny as the grid is moody and ominous. And, you know, it's like the grid looks like, you know, kind of this Mad Max world inside the computer. And Oz looks like a Tokidoki store blew up. And, you know, you have the grid, which exists inside a computer back during and was conceived of during a time when the internet was only used by academics and people in the defense industry. And Oz, of course, is completely wired up to the cloud, and everyone uses it for business, you know, for doing business with one another. And when things start happening inside Oz, they really have impact on the real world. Whereas, you know, in the world of Tron Legacy, you know, it's all very compartmentalized, and you know, that really has a lot to do with the origin of the first Tron. You know, back, you know, even before people had computers at home, you know, computers were things that people had in offices and in, you know, in high rises, and they were mainframes and so forth. And yeah, in both cases, you know, they kind of complement each other. And you know, both movies are about the importance of family and about family ties and coming to terms with the eccentricities of certain members of your family. And the DVD and the Blu-ray are coming out in a month. So, you know, it's like you're not, you know, you don't have much time to see Summer Wars on the big screen. So I suggest you go to the Funimation website and you find out where it's playing, find out if it's playing locally, and if it is playing locally, then for gosh sake, go.
Yeah,
go.
Summer Wars is a feast for the eyes, for the senses, and definitely should be experienced on the big screen if at all possible. And you know, everything I've read about the dub is universally praises it. So,
yeah, it's like I was complaining about Warner Brothers not getting behind this and creating, you know, a Disney style dub for Summer Wars, but in reality, I believe they did a great job. And, go to the Otaku No Podcast website. We will have links to order both the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Yeah, they're up for pre-released, and the current release date is February 15th.
Yes, February 15th, and we're recording on January 16th. So, like I said, time is ticking away. Tick-tock, tick-tock. Same with Evangelion 2.0, You Can Not Advance, which is the second of the Rebuild of Evangelion movies. It's like I got a chance to see 1.0 on the big screen a few times, and, you know, I've seen it on the small screen too. I've seen it on my computer. I've seen it on DVD, and it really is intended to be seen, you know, on a big canvas. You know, you lose a lot going to small screen when you're talking about these Evangelion movies. And it's like the detail that goes into this, and, you know, I mean, on one level, they've packed so much into these movies because of the fact that, you know, originally this story unspooled in a 25-episode series, but you know, they've condensed so much of this into these movies, and it's just, you know, beautifully done. No, you know, hardly any expense was spared to give the appearance that no expense was spared. And, you know, the various angels, you know, if you remember them from the TV series or even from Death and Rebirth, End of Evangelion, they're different now. They're more impressive. They're beautifully done. There's a wonderful melding of 2D and 3D, and it's, you know, this is Anno Hideaki's masterpiece. These movies, and it's like they're not even going to give this as much of a big screen release as they did for Summer Wars. This is only going to be showing locally in Los Angeles at a place called the Downtown Independent, which is a very small little theater near Little Tokyo that a long time ago it was called the Linda Lee, and it was partially owned by one of the big Japanese movie studios, Toei, I think it was. And the Downtown Independent was kind of rebuilt from the skeleton of the old Linda Lee Theater, and it's small, but it's wonderful, and it's got state-of-the-art projection, state-of-the-art sound, and it's, like I said, it's within walking distance of Little Tokyo. You know, make an evening of it. Go get yourself some sushi and then go see this movie. You know, that's what I'm going to do.
All right.
And yeah, it's going to be coming out towards the end of January. And the thing is that the DVD and the Blu-ray are going to be coming out very soon after this. So you really don't have much time. And I mean, in some places they're just going to show it one night only.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, you know, in both cases, these are all being pushed out by Funimation, and they're the ones that will have the information on whether you'll get this opportunity to see it in theaters. But, you know, for crying out loud, go see it in the theater if you can. Just pack these theaters out, you know, come and cosplay, you know, show your enthusiasm, because, you know, if there's enough enthusiasm shown, if, you know, the numbers come in, you know, it's like the big entertainment conglomerates will have no choice but to sit up and take notice that that there's a market for this.
Yeah, definitely two things that should be seen on the big screen to be fully appreciated. Danny, you got something for us?
Yes, I do. These are a couple of anime series from previous years that are just now becoming legally available to the mass market in America. One of them was one that took me by surprise because there was almost no publicity about it. I found out about it on Anime News Network, and that's the American release of, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, Nodame Cantabile, which is a series that was ran in Japan in 2007 and based on a manga. The manga has been released in the United States through, I believe, Del Rey for the last couple of years, but the anime has never been licensed for DVD release in the United States. But it is available on Crackle.com, which is a site run by Sony for Sony programming. And for some reason, Sony has done just a great dub of this series, very professional dub with voices that capture the original, from what I've seen, the original very well. This is a story, the plot could come from a screwball comedy from the 40s. We've got music students at a music university. One of them, Chiaki, is a prodigy who's been working on piano and violin since he was three, and he wants to become a conductor and is crippled in that he is deathly afraid of flying or being on a boat. And considering that he's in Japan and you've got to travel the world to be a conductor, that's a big handicap. So he's at the university, and he takes an interest in Nodame, who is a different kind of prodigy, almost an idiot savant, who is complete slob in person, very poor command of hygiene, kind of innocent in the ways of the world, but she can listen to a classical piece once and play it perfectly with passion in the cantabile style, like singing. And it's a hilarious comedy. I've watched the first three episodes, and it's delightful. The other one is the TV series that they've tried selling it in various forms in the United States over the past 25 years. It's been hampered a bit by its title. It's called The Dirty Pair. And when Americans think dirty pair, they think that's something pornographic. And it's dirty in the terms in the sense of dirty, rotten scoundrels. In other words, it's a pejorative, but not it's not pornography, soft or hardcore. Or Dirty Harry, yes. It's based on some light science fiction novels by Haruka Takachiho, and he probably butchered that pronunciation as well. This is a TV series that came out after the Dirty Pair had made a cameo in Crusher Joe, which was a feature film adaptation of another of Takachiho's novel series. And Takachiho himself is not that fond of this TV series, mainly because they completely redesigned the characters from the original illustrations from his novels, which were done by Yoshikazu Yasuhiko, who Gundam fans will remember as the guy who designed the Gundam characters. And he's not that – they redesigned them for the TV series to be much more cartoony. The TV series came out in the mid-'80s, 1985. It is just now being released by Right Stuff in half-series box sets. And even though Mr. Takachiho doesn't like this series very much, I think it's wonderful. I could watch the episodes like popcorn. It's about two young women, Kei and Yuri, who are troubleshooters in a future interplanetary society. They tend to wear scanty clothes so people don't think much of them. They also tend to create a lot of collateral damage whenever they solve problems. But the thing is, despite their flighty facade, these are very competent young women who can do just about anything. They've got the James Bond type of omnicompetence, and they get thrown into unsolvable problems in this futuristic society, and they solve them. And it's action-packed, it's got a lot of comedy in it, and it's a delight to watch.
I can second that. I love that series. So my picks, I've got two. First one is an anime pick. It's called Project Blue Earth SOS. And if you're at all a fan of classic 50s B-movie sci-fi, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space, you know, that sort of thing, you're going to love this. It's a wonderful homage to that genre. You've got, you know, mysterious aliens bent on taking over the planet. You've got larger-than-life kind of Buck Rogers / Flash Gordon-esque heroes with spaceships and ray guns, flying saucers, evil robots, damsels in distress that swoon. It's got all the hallmarks of your classic 50s B-movie sci-fi, and it's very well done. The animation's great, and it's a 6-part OVA. Each episode is about 45 minutes long, so not a great time investment, and it's all available on one DVD, so not a great money investment either. It's just a great series for, you know, your classic sci-fi fan. My second pick is a bit of an unusual one. It's a computer game, Shura Oka Second Chances. It's by a It's by a studio, a local San Francisco-based company called Okashi Studios, and it is a the what I would call the first credible attempt at a completely U.S. American-made dating sim game. And dating sim games have been out in Japan for many years. It's one of the classic staples of Japanese otaku culture, where it's basically a game where you take the role of a generic male protagonist, and you have these in-game girls that you pursue, and based on the various responses that you give to conversation, you can eventually the goal is to eventually hook up with one of them. It's a genre that hasn't really had very much exposure here in the West, because they're Japanese, and there's the whole language barrier. Recently, there are now several companies that license some of the better examples from this genre and translate them. Jazzed USA, which is I believe one of Peter Payne, Mr. J-List's ventures, it's something that I think really needs to get more publicity out here, because in a lot of these games, some of the storylines are just wonderful, and the artwork is gorgeous as well. I think of them less as games than more like interactive visual novels, or like an anime that you can actually become a part of, because you're...
More familiar to American audiences, the choose your own adventure books.
Yes, exactly. And so, like I said, this company, Okashi Studios, is a San Francisco-based company, and they are really doing something. They're kind of kicking things up a notch. They decided to create a completely U.S.-made example of this game, but they're actually kind of improving on the genre. It's been in development for over 5 years, and it's obvious, it shows that they put a lot of thought and effort and care and love into this. Now, a disclaimer, I've only just started playing it a couple days, but so far I am really liking it, and the reviews I've seen are almost entirely positive. Over 40 hours of gameplay, 10 unique endings, numerous items unlocked through the course of the game, including multimedia and kind of cultural, Japanese culture tidbits, which I think are kind of cool. It's different than your typical Japanese dating sim in that there are actually a lot of things that affect your character. Like you have these attributes, and personality quirks that you have to kind of overcome, and the way, depending on which attributes you emphasize, it unlocks different scenarios, different conversation choices. So in that way, in that respect, it's kind of sort of like a Sims type game in that respect. Lots of replay value, again, depending on how you influence your character, you can get different conversation choices and different outcomes. And there's none of that, that sort of thing.
So you're not. This is
very PG rated. So which
P for teen type,
right?
Type game.
Which some of the reviewers are slamming, but I disagree, because this way it opens up the genre to a larger audience.
Although it would be nice if if that audience was because of the fact that the anime and manga fandom is so balanced as far as gender goes, it would be nice if they, I guess it'll come in the future that there'll be some female-oriented games.
Yeah, they've definitely, they're definitely still in the game, pun, and they're going to work on more titles, and I wouldn't be surprised if a more female-centric title was next in line. Very well done. Beautiful graphics, hand-drawn, typical anime style, but, very shiny. Really well-done dub. It's done by one of the anime dub studios, NYAV Post. You'll see a lot of familiar names. Stephanie Shea, who did various voices in Bleach, and Haruhi Suzumiya, Fuli Huli. Michael, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his last name.
Cinder Niklas.
There you go. Yes. Did some voices for the Venture Brothers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Urusei Yatsura, various other things. Really well done voice dub. And it's just a gorgeous game, available for both PC and Mac, which I'm really, I was really impressed with. They started with Mac support right out the gate. Actually, they released the PC version. They released the Mac version a few weeks after the PC version. And at first, I was kind of peeved at them for that. But when I find out why, I completely agree with their reasoning. They waited until the Mac App Store launched, and they're selling their game through the Mac App Store, which I think is a definite win situation there. Again, available for both PC and Mac, and not that expensive, about $25. And there's a free demo that you can download and sort of try it out. And the nice thing is the demo uses the same save game file format as the retail version. So, you know, if you end up buying the game, you can literally pick up from right where you left off. So really well done game. Definitely check it out. Well, I think that about does it. We did a pretty good job of covering Anime LA. Overall, it was just a lot of fun, very relaxing, and looking forward to the next one.
Absolutely.
Do we get to do our plugs?
Yeah, you can plug.
Well, Michelle, don't you have a plug?
I already had my plugs.
Wasn't it cartoon something?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, one of the things that's happening with us, and you will find out information about this in the future, we're going to be federating ourselves with a couple of different sites and basically creating, as it were, a podcast network. And it's all very much in the planning stages right now. I kind of didn't necessarily want to speak about it this early on because, it's very embryonic. But
you can give a hint.
Yes, yeah, give a tease.
Yeah, we're trying to take this to the next level. And, I mean, other people have done this, most notably the good folk that put out This Week in Tech. They have an entire network devoted to tech podcasts, and they're very they've kind of created this whole complex of various podcasts, and you can subscribe to some of them, you can subscribe to all of them, although who would have the time to listen to the whole lot of what's being produced by them.
Yeah.
We're looking to do something a little less ambitious than that, and we will be putting up further information about this as time goes on. Keep your eyes peeled for something called Assimilation Media Networks. And, we will eventually be at assimilationmedia.net. And it's a very exciting future we have planned for 2011.
Indeed. As long as we're doing plugs, I might as well plug this site that I really like. It's called Anime Planet. On the surface, it seems like just a site where you can put up the anime that you've watched, so that others can see. But there's so much more. You can rate your show. You can rate the series that you've watched, and they have blogs, they've got forums, actually friendly forums where people actually communicate with each other instead of yelling obscenities at each other, which really surprised me. And it's a great way of finding out new series that you may have never heard of, because when you go and look at your list, you can then see, well, if you like this, then maybe you'll like this as well. So I've found quite a few series that way that I honestly had never heard of or never thought to watch and really ended up liking. So animeplanet.com, it's anime-planet.com. Really cool site, and it's free, of course.
I'd like to mention one of my blogs because, you know, that's I'm just so self-centered today. I have a political and economics blog, and it's thestarvingeconomist.blog. What is it?
Is it Blogspot?
Blogspot.com. No, I'm not tired. The reason I mention it is that I'm starting to become interested in different industries and how they are changing. And I've been hearing a lot of snippets about how the anime industry in the United States has had a lot of changes. And I would be really interested in some guest blogs on that topic. I don't know all the details, but I hear you guys mention this is not available anymore and this has shrunk. And that would be a really good guest blog for me. And the other guest blog type that I was interested in had to do with something Michelle said about having more female-oriented games. And I'm interested in any interest group or what's the word? Come on, help me. But you know what I mean. Like disabilities, women, all the kinds of people that may have had some discrimination now or in the past, and how they fare in the anime world. So I'm just kind of asking for that sort of thing. And the other thing I'd like you to do is say your website slowly, because I know what it's like to be listening and not have a website in front of me and not have any pen and paper, because that's so old school.
Well, we do have the show notes, and all of the links will be there.
No, I know that. But suppose you're just listening, and you know you're listening in your car, and you might want to replay it, but you didn't have pen and paper at that moment. So who are you?
Otakunopodcast.com, OtakunoPodcast.com.
And just to throw in, totally, again, non sequitur, but Danny, did you have a plug or a site that you really recommend that people check out?
Well, I think that Anime News Network is a good place to check out the latest on what's going on in anime. It does have somewhat of a point of view, but other than that, I think it's a fun place to check out.
Yes, they also have a great database of you know, pretty much every anime title known to mankind, called the ANN Encyclopedia. There you can look up you know who worked on this series and get a plot synopsis, that sort of thing. It's a very handy reference. I use it a lot. All right, well, I think that pretty much does it. Thank you all for coming on, and we'll see you next time.
Sweet. Thank you.
Thanks, Don, for inviting us.
Well, that about wraps it up for our review. One thing I forgot to mention is that I must give thanks to one of our Twitter followers, Predaderva. Please forgive me if I butchered that pronunciation. His or hers, I'm not sure what gender you are, his or her mentioning of Project Blue Earth SOS in a tweet reminded me of how much I love that series, and I pulled out my DVDs and watched it again, and hence my pick in this week's show. So thank you, whoever you are. As always, if you have any comments on our show, if you have anything to say to us, please feel free to contact us. We have many ways to get in touch with us. You can email us at feedback@otakunopodcast.com. You can call our voice call-in line. You can ping us on Twitter or Facebook. There's a lot of ways to contact us, and all of those can be found on the Contact Us page on otakunopodcast.com. Also, remember to check otakunopodcast.com. There you'll find the show notes, including links to all of the news articles, products, whatnot that we discussed in this episode. Remember that we're also on Twitter and Facebook. I tend to update those a lot in between episodes, and you know, it's great for, like, you know, if I find something cool that I want to share, but that doesn't really deserve an entire blog post on its own. And of course, remember that I also post blog entries on otakunopodcast.com in between episodes as well. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll see you next time.